Greenside, the IGA podcast.
Also, Mike McCoy, the 2013 U.S.
Zach Johnson, now a two-time major champion after becoming the winner of the 144th Open Championship.
All right, welcome to Greenside, the IGA podcast. Clint Brown here with you. Got guest Jake Miller, Director of Regional Affairs for the Midwest Region for the United States Golf Association, the USGA. That Midwest region includes Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, Minnesota, North Dakota, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. Jake, I think hit them all. How are you today?
Doing very well, Clint. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Well, like I said, you are a Director of Regional Affairs for the Midwest region for the USGA, but you got your start back in Tennessee. Why don't we kind of start there and work our way kind of forward?
Yeah, absolutely. My start was as a USGA PGA Boatwright intern for the Tennessee Golf Association. That was back in 2012, summer of 2012. I was in grad school, sport administration, trying to figure out what I wanted to do for my life, and started working with the Tennessee Golf Association. And after a couple weeks time, I kind of knew that's the direction I wanted to go for a career. I really didn't know anything about the AGA world at the time. I played every other sport, but golf growing up just kind of was a recreational couple times a summer golfer with my dad, and went to Tennessee and did the internship and really enjoyed the championship operation side of things, as well as I think Tennessee is one of the most unique AGA setups. They're at a golf house that includes all the rest of the state governing bodies of golf, the PGA, the foundation, junior tour, superintendents. Everybody was in one building that was also surrounded by a par three course. A little par three course that was the agronomy testing center for the state as well. So every day, if I didn't want to jump on 24 and go home because the traffic was busy, I'd go hit a bucket of balls or go chip and putt or play the I think it's called the little course at Aspen Grove. And then when the traffic subsided, I'd get in the car and go home. So it was kind of a unique place and really made me fall in love with golf and with golf admin right away.
Yeah, I knew they had a pretty good setup down there, kind of all the things under one roof there. So yeah, I was kind of interested on how that exactly all worked. So Jake, can you kind of talk to me, and I kind of know about this as well as you do, but can you kind of tell our listeners about that Boatwright internship program?
Yeah, the Boatwright internship program is kind of a crown jewel program for the USGA and really for state associations as well. I always kind of like to lead off talking about Boatwrights by kind of illustrating the impact that the program has. And we go to the IAGA conference, and for those that don't know what it is, it's a national conference that all the AGAs, the golf community member, or the Allied Golf Associations are members of the IAGA. We meet kind of once a year. In the opening session, there's always a time where the president or whoever it might be of the association stands up and asks how many were previously Boatwrights. And you look around the room and about 50% of the hands or more are up. And so when you're looking at a program that's making impact and putting people into jobs and giving them the training that they need, hard to find a better place to find a program. So let's see, it's about a $1.8-1.9 million program, and it funds about 125 interns across the AGA network on an annual basis. Some of those internships are as short as 3 months, and they can spend as long as 12 months. But it's been a really, really popular program with the AGA. It's something that we know is critical to the operations of the AGAs every single year. And one that we're really, really happy to continue to fund going forward.
Well, and I think I've mentioned this on this podcast before, but all five of the full-time staff here at the IGA are former interns. So that kind of just goes to show you know, kind of the proof is in the pudding, isn't it?
Absolutely. I was the same way in my time in Utah. Well over half our staff was Boatwright interns, and kind of what I say, the golf-specific roles, executive director, tournament director, membership director, all of those roles were former Boatwrights. Our controller wasn't, but really all of the other roles were, which, like you said, the proof's in the pudding. It certainly is a program that has impacted and you know, kind of grown the next generation of golf administrators, if you will.
Well, and I've told, you know, interns that I've had, you know, I mean, this is your step into the door if this is something you want to do. You know, if it's not something you want to do, that's okay. You know, we're going to help you with the experience and learn some things. But I tell you what, I can't think of anything else that's going to get you more prepared for that AGA world or even, you know, onto things that like you're doing now than that internship program.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, the exposure that you'll receive in the Boat Ride internship program, you know, and every AGA is different. And depending, I think the internship program has evolved over the last handful of years. You've seen more communications interns, more marketing interns. You've even seen some finance interns across the country. You know, it was originally, you know, heavily operations based and still is heavily operations based. But I think you've seen that evolution of different types of interns that AGAs need and want. So if you're interested in different avenues where it's maybe not just operations, you're interested in a different area, you know, the AGA world, it's easy to take a look across the country when those internships are starting to get posted, which is about this time of year. And find something that really will suit what you want to do in terms of your career.
I agree. Jake, so you did your internship at Tennessee and then you moved on to Utah. What that timeline look like, I guess, for you?
Sure. Well, I had one quick stop in the middle there.
Okay.
against the directive of my executive director at the time, which Matt Vanderpool, who's sure. Now the executive director in Georgia.
Yes.
I took a tournament director gig with the Hurricane Junior Golf Tour, which at that time was based in Jacksonville. They're now in Orlando.
Okay.
A smaller for-profit tour that kind of feeds into AJGA world and some of that stuff. And I hadn't seen a lot of opportunities at that point in time. I got a little anxious as I was starting to finish up my grad program. And so I took a job with them, but kind of after a short period of time, knew that I wanted to get back into the AGA world. And that's when Bill Walker, who now runs IAGA, had posted their rules and competitions director position. So I had applied for that and found myself after about 6 months in Florida, moving out to the great state of Utah, where I, you know, just really spent the last almost decade. So with Utah, I started as director of rules and competitions. And then after 5 years, Bill left and went on to the IAGA and was kind of in the right place at the right time and had at least done well enough in the board's eyes for them to give me a chance as the executive director. So the last 4 years of my time in the AGA world has been serving in that role.
Jake, I haven't been there, but give us a little snapshot of golf in Utah, because I think I kind of have an idea what it's like, but I want to get your take on it.
The Utah golf is really unique. It's a heavily public golf state, with much of that public golf being municipally owned and operated, whether it's city, county, or state. There's only 16 private clubs in the state. And so really, if you play golf in Utah, you can play pretty much every golf course that there is in the state. The quality is really good. You know, when you're looking at public golf courses, quality versus cost, really, really good, low cost. You know, as you look around the country, the cost of public golf in a lot of states is really elevated, and Utah is very economical when it comes to that. It's an economical state as a whole. But if you love mountain golf, if you love vistas, if you love being able to see for 15 miles, it's kind of the place to be. There's one of my favorite places in Utah. So Soldier Hollow Golf Course, the only course in Utah to have hosted a USGA championship, Publinks. We held our stadium there, and in the summer there, in the morning, it sits on the west side of a big valley. And so the sun comes up over the mountain ridge on the other side, and it's just picturesque. And that's when I think of Utah golf, that's really what I imagine and envision every time I do so. So it's a really, really beautiful golf state. Not a lot of traditional golf courses like you might see back east. Not going to be your Cedar Rapids Country Club type places, but that kind of very different up and down, never a flat lie, challenging Utah golf. That's really what you're going to find.
Okay. So Jake, I know you said you were, you know, you went, you had a short stop between Tennessee and then Utah and moved into the executive director role. Can you just kind of talk about, you know, kind of your progression through that and just how, you know, you're learning more and more and just kind of how you've taken that to what you're doing now with the USGA?
Yeah. When I, like I said, I felt like I was kind of in the right place at the right time to fill that executive director position in Utah. And really, at, you know, at the end of the day, I really enjoyed the competitions, the tournament aspect side of the job as I was working rules and competitions, but had a significant interest in the business side of the game. I think golf associations have come a long way in the last 10 to 15 years, and going from, you know, championship organizations that only run championships and really focus on that championship golfer to organizations that really care about, you know, kind of the other 90% that are heavily focused on memberships. Now, that's not saying we don't still run lots of championships, and that's kind of the, you know, I always used to say in Utah, it's kind of the sexy part of what we do. It's what gets the news headlines. It's what, you know, puts people on TV at the end of the day. But the 94 or 90% of golfers that play our game and that are members of our organizations, that's the part that I wanted to dive into more and you know, be able to push the envelope there and bring more golfers into the game. And ultimately, that's kind of what steered me towards the USGA, because that's really what, you know, in the regional affairs role, it's kind of a gray position where it encompasses a lot and is kind of the glue between AGAs and the USGA. But inside of it, there's a lot of forward thinking, long-term thinking, strategic planning type efforts, you know, to better AGA's stature within the game, to try to bring more golfers into the AGA ecosystem. So that was kind of the part that started to push me in. And the other piece is relationships. You know, golf is a relationship game. When you're working in golf admin, it's really hard to accomplish anything if you don't have the relationships, whether it's in your local golf community, if that's where you're at, or nationally, whatever it might be. And I've always loved conferences like the IAGA conference or regional meetings or things like that to bounce ideas, to listen to what others are doing, to hear the creative ideas that other AGAs have had, and to steal some of those and bring them back to Utah and try to help. So in my role now, that's certainly a piece of what I do, is being able to listen to those AGAs and bring ideas from Iowa to Minnesota and from Wisconsin to Northern Ohio. And then the last piece would be working with committee folks. So the USGA has 500 or so USGA committee members around the country that are volunteers. Primarily, people would know them for working USGA championships and for working UGA or AGA championships as well. But you know, really, they're really talented people that are plugged into their golf communities, and a couple of them have been my mentors over the years, especially in Utah. So getting to work with a much larger pool of them was also really exciting for me.
Jake, I know we talked about this a little bit. You were just in town for a couple of our board meetings, but can you talk about just kind of the AGAs and kind of how they fit into the kind of the USGA umbrella and kind of how that meshes together and is so beneficial for both kind of both sides?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the AGA landscape, I mean, really AGAs are the delivery method for USGA core services. I mean, handicapping being the number one component of that. I mean, handicapping, and you look at course rating, there's, I don't know how many courses there are in the country, many thousands of golf courses, but USGA absolutely cannot rate those golf courses, nor can we do handicapping for the 3 million golfers that are in the GIN platform. So when you look at AGAs, they're really an extension of the USGA at the local level, conducting all of those course services and serving golfers, you know, in other ways. Obviously, every state has their own championships and junior championships, senior championships, women's championships. So you're really seeing kind of that I don't know. I always looked at the USGA when I was at Utah as kind of like the national governing body and sending down, you know, we were I think I hear it on the Dan Patrick show all the time, oh, it's the mothership, and when they're talking about ESPN. Mm-hmm. And that's always kind of how I viewed the USGA in terms of the AGA world. They're kind of the mothership, and you know, we're getting all of the core services down from them, and also running USGA qualifying, sending players back up to those national championships. So really a collaborative, and I think you've seen that even more the last handful of years. In fact, all of this, the joint strategy work that's happening is just shows the high level of collaboration between the USGA and the AGAs at this point. But yeah, they're really, from my standpoint, I always saw it as the mechanism to do all of the core services that kind of the USGA governs.
Yeah, I've, you know, when I explain it to people that, you know, maybe don't quite understand, I kind of try to tell people it's kind of the Iowa Golf Association. It's kind of the Iowa chapter, if you will, of the USGA.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I know the PGA section has chapters.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
We don't quite function that way, but I agree. I think that relationship is very, that's probably the best way to categorize it for somebody that's unfamiliar with that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Jake, I know you're still, you know, kind of learning a lot on the fly here that you've started with the USGA and you've started here pretty recently, but can you kind of summarize kind of what's been going on at the USGA level that maybe people aren't aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple things that I think from a golfer's standpoint are important to consider when talking about the USGA. And the first, because I'm kind of an agronomy guy. Always enjoyed the grass growing side of golf and the turf management aspect. So I think one of the neat pieces that Mike Wan, who's now been the CEO for about a year, put forth was our 15-30-45, and that's reduce water by 45% over the course of the next 15 years by investing $30 million into those efforts. And coming from a place like Utah, where water is top of mind, top of ballot, top of legislator tongue, and all of that all the time, you know, water was a huge piece. So seeing an initiative like that, which it's a big, bold initiative. I mean, it's going to take significant work to achieve that. But I think one of the things that golf suffers from, and sometimes we deserve it, sometimes maybe we don't, it's bad perception, is some of the negative perceptions about, you know, who plays and how they play and how many resources are being used to maintain golf courses. So initiatives like that, I think, are going to be something that really helps put golf in a positive light, especially as a society, we're very sensitive to maybe those environmental aspects. So, you know, it's important, really important in my opinion, especially for the Southwest, but really all over the country to put water issues and things like that at the forefront of our minds. Another piece that I think this last year was really important, we're talking about diversity and equity and inclusion within the game, is the raising of the purse of the Women's Open. Almost doubling it to $10 million, getting it very close to the U.S. Open purse. And you've seen some of the other major governing bodies in the game, PGA of America being one of the most notable, raising their purses significantly as well. Mike Wan comes from the LPGA. Women's golf is always going to be top of mind for him, and making that change and kind of getting away from what one might consider the USGA way and not having naming rights for a championship. You know, you saw ProMedica be involved and kind of put on top as you know, a presenting sponsor for the Women's Open, which in turn allowed us to take that purse up to that $10 million number. So, and then the last thing I'll touch on is the Adaptive Open. This year was the inaugural Adaptive Open, and it showcased and celebrated the adaptive golf community by providing them a stage to compete for a national championship. I mean, this is a group of individuals that has a ton of talent, and they didn't have that national stage to be able to compete on. It was really powerful to see all of the reaction, the footage, the coverage of that championship, and then the reaction that you saw in the golf community from people like Tiger Woods and Annika Sorensen, really, you know, taking those golfers and putting them up on a pedestal and showing how special what they were doing really was. So Those are kind of some three big areas this year that I think people should know what the USGA is working on.
Well, you led me into another question, Jake. Mike Wan, I think we both heard him speak down at IAGA when it was in Dallas. And, I mean, energetic. Holy cow. I mean, like you said, I think we were talking about this too. I mean, we got out of that meeting and it was like, let's run through a wall, you know, let's go. So I think he's not afraid to fail, which I thought was refreshing, but I think he's got some ideas and definitely wants to get some things done, doesn't he?
Yeah, I would, you know, it's funny because now I'm looking at him from with it, you know, as a,
right. Exactly.
As a coworker of sorts. But you know, sitting in the room that you sat in last year, listening to him talk, and I think he was four or five, you know, Diet Cokes deep and just ready to absolutely smash the day.
Yes.
But that's the energy that he brings all the time. And it really is. It's kind of intoxicating, if you will. He does make you want to run through a wall. In fact, the first thing I did after that meeting, I texted one of my board members at the UGA who also sat on the USGA executive committee. I said, well, I just spent 45 minutes listening to Mike Wan speak, and I feel so energized right now. Like, let's get after some stuff. And, you know, that's the kind of mentality he brings day in and day out. You're right. I think you said it really well. He's not afraid to fail. He loves to jump in head first. And if we make some mistakes and we do some things that don't necessarily work, we'll look back and change and edit and update and make sure they do going forward. But being afraid to fail is not going to hold him back in the things that he wants to accomplish. And I think from the USGA stance and where we're trying to make big impacts on the golf world, it's gonna serve us really well. Things sometimes in the past, at least I know I've felt this way from an AGA level, that if you wanted to see change or things have moved a little slower, but I don't think that's gonna be the case. When Mike wants something done, that's how it's going to get done, and that's when it's going to get done.
I would totally agree with that. Jake, talking a little bit about your region, and I don't know, maybe this might be kind of a loaded question, but I'm just curious if there's maybe a couple things that you see that are, you know, kind of consistent throughout a lot of the AGAs in your region, and then maybe some things that, you know, that maybe differentiate maybe one to the other. And I don't know, you know, maybe if that's just population, you know, or you know, region, exactly where they are in the region. Just curious about that, if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, coming from Utah, we had a 365 season, you know, it was in southern Utah. Northern Utah was a bit seasonal, but you know, the working with the AGAs in the Midwest, there's that seasonal nature of the association is much more pronounced than I have been used to in working with Arizona and Southern Cal and Northern Cal and these associations that really run a 365 schedule. So that's probably one of the biggest things, is just having that really distinct off season. That's certainly one thing I've noticed. I think a lot of the AGAs are similar sized. And one thing I've definitely noticed from the golf landscape is how popular the game is in the upper Midwest during the season. I mean, and part of that's understandable to the point where we have a shorter golf season, so you gotta have to kind of relish every moment of it while it's here. But tee sheets are packed. I mean, championships are packed. Membership numbers are really good across the board. You know, AGAs are being able to do more because they've got an influx of resources. So it's, and then at the same time, the bandwidth for the staffs is stretched as far as it can get because the game is so popular right now. And in the summer, you're trying to pack so much into a short season, whether it's junior golf or association championships, or even just your men's and women's leagues at your local club. So that's kind of one thing, or a couple of things that I've noticed, you know, coming to the Midwest and being here for a few months, you know, seeing a little bit different pace to the game in the summer than I'm used to maybe elsewhere.
Jake, I didn't mention this. You're based out of Milwaukee. That's correct, right?
Yes, based out of Milwaukee.
Okay. Well, I see announced we got a U.S. Women's Open coming down the pike. It's going to be in the Midwest at Chicago Golf Club. So that's kind of exciting for us Midwesterners that maybe don't get out to the coast to see some of those big championships.
Absolutely. I think when you look at the middle of the state, kind of the Midwest, the Central, the Great Plains, there's not as many USGA championships held in this part of the country, comparatively speaking to the coastal regions in the Northeast. So yeah, when we can get one in this part of the country, I think it's always really exciting, especially a women's open. We were talking about the USGA's top couple of events, and the women's open is certainly right in that list. And of course, Chicago Golf Club being one of the original founding members of the USGA, and they hosted the inaugural Senior Women's Open Championship a few years ago. So awesome to see them be put into the women's rotation as well as the
Walker Cup. I think it's Walker Cup. Yeah, I was Walker just going to mention that. I was going to ask you that because I thought it when I read it, I thought it was Walker Cup, but I was like, maybe I looked at that wrong. So
no, I think you're right. Walker Cup. So I mean, you're bringing two premier championships to the region and to an absolute premium golf club too. And Chicago's steeped in history and tradition. Like I said, they're an original founding five members of the USGA. So always very exciting when they get onto the calendar. And for us folks in the Midwest to have that championship, you know, from where you guys sit in Des Moines, you're, you know, only a couple hour drive to the Chicagoland area.
Well, and what I think is exciting, at least from, you know, kind of my perspective, is the USGA's either has or is going to be going to some venues that are absolutely incredible that a lot of people probably have never seen, even on TV. You know, you got Los Angeles Country Club coming down the pike. You got, you know, Chicago Golf Club that, you know, hosted the inaugural U.S. Senior Women's. And it's just like, wow, we're able to see so many different courses anymore, and especially some iconic ones like you mentioned. It's pretty exciting, I think, for a golfer that really understands some of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you talked about some of the very best golf courses in the country. And I think that's one thing that sets the USGA apart from some of the other big national governing bodies. I mean, when you look at the USGA calendar, it really is. It's the cream of the cream when it comes to championship site location. And I think you've seen probably even in the last 18 months that those championships getting scheduled out so much further in advance than we used to see. I think what we have on here is like 2050 US Open is on the books at Oakland Hills.
Yeah.
you know, so stuff like that is or 2051. I mean, to put that much planning so far in advance and, you know, you're going to absolutely world-class facilities, and you're going to have world-class players on world-class facilities from the U.S. Open to the Adaptive Open, from the Girls Junior to the USAM. I mean, it's a great stage for those players. They deserve it. They work hard to get to those national championships, you know, and they deserve to play at the best facilities in the country.
Jake, changing gears a little bit, when you're not – knee deep in all your USGA stuff, what do you like to do in your free time?
You know, I haven't had as much free time this year as I would like, sure, to, you know, having changed jobs, but appreciate you asking. I do enjoy the game of golf. I got down to a 5 handicap during the pandemic in 2020, which I was feeling great about, but now I've sat on a soft cap most of last year and a bunch of this year because I've just been going up and up and up, and so now I sit in the tens. But I really enjoy golf, and one of the appeals of this position for me as well was being able to come back and live in the Midwest. I grew up in a little town outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and so I grew up hunting and fishing and doing a lot of outdoor recreation in that regard. So it's been fun to be able to come back and do a little bit of that this fall, do a little bit of deer hunting, do a little bit of bird hunting, get on the lakes for some fishing. So, you know, kind of excited to be able to kind of incorporate some of that in my life. And of course, like any good guy that grows up near Green Bay, I'm a diehard Packers fan, which is unfortunate this year because they're not very good. But so far in my life, they've been pretty good. So I don't have a whole lot to complain about.
Well, I was going to ask you if you still get to play some, and it sounds like when you're able to, you do. And I'll tell you what, I think we could have a good match, because I'll tell you what, I've had a pretty good summer, and my handicap's probably a little lower than where I really feel like I am, which probably is like a lot of golfers, but I think probably in that like 5 to 9 range, I think we could have some good games. So I'll have to keep that in the back of my mind when we're.
Oh yeah. That's what the best thing about match play is. It's kind of a great equalizer. You know, yep. I may need a couple strokes from you, but you know, I think we can make that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Well, Jake, I appreciate, you taking time to talk with us. And again, appreciate you coming down for our board meetings here last week and kind of filling in our board on the exciting stuff that the USGA does and kind of has on the docket. And I guess happy holidays if I don't talk to you between now and then. And again, thanks for stopping by the podcast.
Yeah, much appreciated for having me on, and for all the podcast listeners. Everyone is very lucky to be a part of the Iowa Golf Association. They are one of the best. They have a fantastic staff that really care about the game in the state. So count yourselves as lucky members that you get to be a part of the IGA.
Yeah, we appreciate that, Jake. We'll talk to you later.